and continue, I suppose. And just to remind you, we are now working on the gradual training. We're looking at what is roughly equivalent to the sixth factor of the Noble Eightfold Path, which is right effort. And all of this is really kind of included in sense restraint on the Buddhist path. Sense restraint, also full awareness, sampajanya, those kind of areas is what we're dealing with now. And one of the most important things to restrain and to get a handle on is, of course, ill will and negativity and these kind of things, because it is so disruptive for own happiness and the happiness of others and our interpersonal relationships and all of these kind of things. So the next sutta here is going to specifically talk about ill will and how to deal with that. And so this is kind of getting more and more practical. We're kind of homing in on very practical application of the principles that we have seen so far, how to use these principles in actual real-life situations, if you like. So this is what this is about. So removing resentment here. Resentment is like any kind of ill will, I suppose, is what is included in this. And this is how this sutta goes, one of the kind of very practical suttas again here. There, the Venerable Sariputta addressed the bhikkhus. Friends, the bhikkhus, friend, those bhikkhus replied, and the Venerable Sariputta said this. And maybe before I go on, Venerable Sariputta, he is often said to be the Buddha's right-hand monk, if you like. And often when you see the Buddha statue, you will always see Venerable Sariputta. He will be on the Buddha's right side. And then you have Venerable Mahamoggallana on the left side. And Venerable Mahamoggallana will always have his hand in Anjali. Whereas Venerable Sariputta, he will sit something like this. So this is how you know the difference between the two, right? Different posture. It's always the posture that matters. And Venerable Sariputta, he was said in the suttas to be the wisest monk in the Sangha. And the Buddha specifically said that if anyone is to keep the wheel of the Dhamma turning, say if the Buddha passed away or something like that, there was always Venerable Sariputta who was to keep it turning. So he was kind of almost on the same level as the Buddha in terms of wisdom, which is very interesting. So normally these suttas are by him, are often considered kind of almost on par with the suttas by the Buddha. Of course, sometimes what happens is that Venerable Sariputta is said to have, for example, a close connection with the Abhidhamma teachings. So sometimes suttas that may be a little bit later than the very earliest ones, they are kind of put into the mouth of Venerable Sariputta. And this is one of the things to kind of watch out for as well. So some of the more elaborate suttas in the Pali Canon, they are spoken by Sariputta. So that, you know, once you kind of move outside the realm of the word of the Buddha, things always become a little bit more uncertain as a consequence. But anyway, so this is whether it is the very earliest or whether it is not doesn't really matter so much. What matters is how it fits in with the other suttas and to that extent how authentic it is. So this is what he has to say. Friends, there are these five ways of removing resentment by which a bhikkhu, bhikkhuni, lay follower should entirely remove resentment when it has arisen towards anyone. What are these five? Here, a person's bodily behavior is impure, but his verbal behavior is pure. One should remove resentment towards such a person. A person's verbal behavior is impure, but his bodily behavior is pure. One should also remove resentment towards such a person. A person's bodily behavior and verbal behavior are impure, but from time to time he gains an opening of the mind, placidity of mind. One should also remove resentment towards such a person. A person's bodily behavior and verbal behavior are impure, and he does not gain an opening of the mind, placidity of the mind from time to time. One should also remove resentment towards such a person. A person's bodily behavior and verbal behavior are pure, and from time to time he gains an opening of the mind, placidity of the mind. One should also remove resentment towards such a person. So here we have teaching in brief, and this is one of the characteristics of the suttas, the Buddha, or here in this case Venerable Sariputta, they give a teaching in brief, and then they expand on it afterwards. It's one of these very well-known methods of teaching. If you want to remember something, it's a classical way of pedagogy, how do you pronounce that word, I'm not sure, and they use that for pedagogical purposes to be able to kind of absorb the lesson better. So even the Buddha used this, which is interesting. Many of these principles are kind of eternal, they go back a long, long way. Now these five different kinds of people, if you look at them, they include everybody. Here they include, start from the most kind of scallywag person who doesn't have any good qualities whatsoever, really dodgy one, to the kind of saint who has absolutely full of good qualities, and everyone in between also is included in that. So there is no basis for having ill will towards anyone. When you do your metta meditation, you cannot say, may all beings be happy except this one person, right? There is no basis for that in the suttas. We have to include everyone in our metta meditation. And it's nice, one of those wonderful things about if you live the Buddhist life fully and you live it really well, you don't have any enemies anymore. Right? This is one of those wonderful things. In fact, you cannot really afford to have any enemies if you want to live the Buddhist life to the maximum. Everybody has to be included. Everybody has to come within the field of your kindness and your generosity. If other people don't like you or they have a problem with you, then it's their problem. Don't worry about that. That's kind of irrelevant. It doesn't matter what other people think of you. You're never going to please everyone in this world. There's always going to be people who are difficult. But from your point of view, there's no reason to have an enmity towards anyone. And it's a wonderful thing, way to live life, when you don't have enmity towards anyone. So the question then is, how do we do this? And this is what this sutta really answers, how it is possible not to have enmity towards anyone. Even those people in your life who you find very difficult, and they may not, they may not even like you, or they may cause all kind of troubles for you, or whatever, still it is quite possible, and not that difficult actually, to at the very least be neutral towards them, not have any kind of ill will and negativity. It's a very wonderful way of living when you get into that spot. Everyone is your friend. Everyone is kind of unproblematic. At the very least, you have compassion for them. So the first kind of person then is the one. Is how friends should resentment be removed towards a person whose bodily behavior is impure, but whose verbal behavior is pure. And so here we are dealing with a person who has some good qualities and some bad ones. The way Venerable Sariputta divides things up here, he divides it up into bodily behavior on the one hand and verbal behavior on the other. And I have never really been able to think of why it should be divided exactly in this way. Maybe it is the case that some people are kind by body and other people are kind of kind by speech, but not vice versa, I don't know. But to me the idea is just that we have different qualities. And there are good qualities in everyone, and there are bad qualities pretty much in everyone. We are a bit all over the place, and we kind of vary so much. And this is one of those, I think, important insights into human character, that people aren't really all just nice or all just bad. That's incredibly rare, but we all kind of fluctuate a bit between these qualities. And this is one of those important things. We tend to kind of take sides. There are certain people we like, some are certain people we don't like. But very often we just tend to look at certain qualities with them. We amplify certain qualities. And once we don't like somebody, we're not able to see the good qualities anymore. We're blinded to those good qualities because we have kind of an emotional vested interest in seeing the negative in things. And this is part of what we challenge with these particular perceptions. We challenge some of those assumptions that we have about other people. We learn to see the good qualities in others, even though we may not at first wish to acknowledge the fact that they have good qualities. So how do we do this? And here we get a simile straight away. Suppose a rag-robed bhikkhu sees a rag by the roadside. He would press it down with his left foot, spread it out with his right foot, tear off an intact section and take it away with him. So too, when a person's bodily behavior is impure, but his verbal behavior is pure, on that occasion one should not attend to the impurity of the bodily behavior, but should instead attend to the purity of his verbal behavior. In this way, resentment towards that person should be removed. So here we have this nice simile, the rag-robed bhikkhu, or perhaps bhikkhuni as well, wearing rag robes. And wearing rag robes basically means that you, whatever rag you find, you take those rags along the roadside, wherever it is, in the charnel grounds, wherever those rags are to be found, and you sew together your robes from those rags. Yeah, so when you see a rag by the roadside, if you are a rag robe bhikkhu, you think, hooray, a rag, and you're so happy. And you grab that rag, and then what you do with that rag, you press it down with your left foot, and spread it out with your right foot. And the idea here is to get an overview of a person, right? You spread the rag out in the same way you look at the person, you look at all the qualities, and you look at everything that is there available, from the worst kind of bad qualities to the best kind of good qualities, and everything in between. You get an overview of that person. Maybe you write it down on a piece of paper or whatever it is that you do. And then once you have got an overview of that rag, then you tear off the bad stuff. Yeah, or the bad qualities, you tear it off. And you, of course, once you tear off, you throw it away. And you take the good part of that cloth and you carry it with you. In exactly the same way, when you see all the qualities in a person, then you take those bad qualities. They are rubbish. Yeah, just like the rubbish part of the rag. They are rubbish, and you throw them out, and you carry the good qualities with you in your heart as you kind of keep on going on in life. And that is the idea here. And a very important part of this, and what is one of the things I mentioned this before in brief, but an important part of this, people often complain, but are you really being realistic? If you just take the good qualities of somebody and you don't look at the bad ones, is that really being realistic? And the answer is that there isn't really any realistic view. We all have our subjective experiences. Two different people look at the same person and have very different ideas of exactly the same person. Who is right? Is there any objective view? In fact, there cannot be any objective view because we are all so changeable. We're changing all the time. One moment you are upset with somebody, one moment you're super nice. Which one is the real you? There isn't any real you. They're just different qualities that kind of arise and come about at different times. Yeah, and sometimes we're moving towards more good qualities, sometimes we're moving towards more bad qualities. And this is why in Buddhism we have this idea that we cannot compare each other. Nobody is worse, nobody is better, we're not equal to others, because there is no objective standard by which we can measure each other against each other. We are always these fluctuating entities. So which you are you going to compare to someone else? The you that is now, the you that in 1 hour, the you that is angry, the you that is kind, the you that is generous, the you that is deluded, which part of you are you going to judge? How are you going to compare? This is why comparison is really impossible in the Buddhist teachings. And this is why we say that this whole idea of conceit, the equality, even the equality is a kind of conceit. It is a conceit in the sense that it is based on the idea that we are solid entities with solid qualities, but we are not. And because of that, comparison is impossible. So the idea of not being able to compare each other is based on the idea of non-self, the idea that there is no intrinsic qualities in any one of us. So this is how, why this whole idea of of here that, you know, of focusing on the good qualities rather than the bad ones, why this actually works. Because there is no objective view. There is no kind of real, reliable way of looking at people. But what there is a way of looking at people that is supportive of spiritual growth. There is a way of looking at people which is detrimental to spiritual growth. So it's more what works that matters than what reality is. Forget about reality. It's impossible to get to it anyway. Ask yourself instead, what works? And that is how we look at things. And when I think about people, I always think that it is no wonder that people have some bad qualities in this world. If you look at the world, you look at all the things that happen to us, all the kind of influences we have from everywhere, from, you know, people in the past that haven't perhaps been as kind to us as they should be, and all of these kind of things, of course we're going to have some bad qualities. Being conditioned into us, it is to be expected. What is rather really worth rejoicing in and being happy about is the fact that people have so many good qualities. What a wonderful thing that is. And when you do that, you kind of let go of those bad qualities. Of course they're going to be there. And you rejoice in the good qualities and you focus on that instead. Because that is really worthwhile bringing along, taking it into your heart and carrying it along with you as you walk on into this life. And so this is what this is saying. You take these on board, and that is what you use. Why? Because they work, because it's a pragmatic way of living your life. And so now you can see the idea here is to focus on good qualities, because this is the metta part, the friendly part, the goodwill part of the Buddhist practice. And what we will see in a second here is how the Buddha emphasizes the idea of metta is so important on this path. So we try to focus on the good qualities as much as we possibly can. And this is not so hard to do. It sounds like this is difficult. It's actually not all that hard. You just have to kind of learn to do this in the right way. And as I said, when you come to a place like this, when you are around good Kalyanamittas in the Buddhist community, other people who think like you, there are so much goodness to be seen. This is one of the wonderful things about being a Buddhist monk, is that whenever you go anywhere in the world, you meet so many kind people everywhere. People who want to live well, people who keep the 5 precepts, who keep the 8 precepts, who do acts of generosity and charity all the time, who meditate, to all of these things. They are not perfect. Of course they're not perfect. You can't expect that. But they are very well intentioned and they want to move forward in the right way. It's something worth celebrating. It's something worth feeling really good about. So that is really the right way of going about these things. And then you slowly shift your mind. Very often the reason why we see the negative things in other people is just because of bad habits. Let's turn those habits around and see the good in other people instead. A very, very, very useful thing to do. So that is the first one here, the idea of seeing the purity of the verbal behavior and just disregarding the impurity of the bodily behavior in this case. And in this way, that resentment, that ill will, that negativity is removed towards that person. So let us move on to the next one, which is very, very similar, but a slightly different simile, which brings out a few additional points here. And how, friends, should resentment be removed towards the person whose verbal behavior is impure, but whose bodily behavior is pure? Suppose there is a pond covered with algae and water plants. A man might arrive afflicted and oppressed by the heat, weary, thirsty, and parched. He would plunge into the pond, sweep away the algae and water plants with his hands, drink from his cupped hands, and then leave. So too, when a person's verbal behavior is impure, but his bodily behavior is pure, on that occasion, one should not attend to the impurity of his verbal behavior, but should instead attend to the purity of his verbal bodily behavior. In this way, resentment towards that person should be removed. So here we have another simile, and the simile also brings out some very nice aspects of how this works. So you come to a pond. The pond is the person, right? A person is like a pond, and that pond is covered with algae and water plants. And the algae and the water plants, these are the bad character, the negative kind of character aspects of this person. So then this man comes and he is afflicted and oppressed by the heat. That means you are afflicted by ill will. Ill will is hot. Ill will, it kind of makes you feel heated up, and it also makes you weary, right? Because you get tired after a while of all this ill will. I don't know if you have noticed that sometimes if you get upset about something, often you lose your energy afterwards. You have energy for a while, but while you are upset, because that upset gives you a kind of energy. But then afterwards, you feel weary because of that anger or whatever. And thirsty here, parched, means that you are kind of searching for a way of extinguishing that anger. Yeah, so you are thirsty, looking for some way of getting rid of it, hopefully. That's the idea. So what you do, you plunge into that pond. Yeah, you sweep away the algae and the water plants. You sweep away those negative qualities. You know that it is rubbish. You know it is bad. It has a negative effect on you. Don't want to have anything to do with it. Sweep it aside. In other words, you look in a different direction. And then with your cupped hands, is anjalika, it's like anjali is kind of the word for that. And you drink, you take on board the good qualities of that person, you drink them into yourself, fill up your mind with these things. And then you leave, and then your thirst is quenched, and you don't feel parched and weary anymore. The heat has evaporated, and you feel cool. You cool down by focusing on the good qualities of that person. And you carry those qualities around with you afterwards when you drink them up in this way. So again, this idea how the looking at the good qualities, they cool you, and they take away that oppression which is the seeing, having the ill will and the negativity which is so problematic here. So that's another beautiful way of seeing, understanding how this actually works. One of the things I didn't actually mention before, but one of the kind of classical ways that it kind of comes out better with the previous one, and this is a kind of nice way that Ajahn Brahm talks about this sometimes, and this is the idea that if you have a problem with somebody, what you can do is you can kind of write down, first of all, you write down the negative qualities of that person that you have problems with, and then you write it down on a piece of toilet paper, ideally, right? And then you write down the good qualities. The good qualities you can write down on a nice piece of paper. And you have to really struggle sometimes. You really have to struggle to remember the good qualities. But you push yourself. And after a while, you start to get those good qualities coming out. And then when you have written down all the good qualities, you take that toilet paper and you throw it where the toilet paper belongs, in the toilet, and you flush it down, right? And it's a beautiful symbolic idea that rubbish gets chucked in the toilet and then it gets flushed away and it kind of disregarded. It's a nice symbolic way of getting rid of those bad qualities in that sense. So, and then you take those good qualities that you've written down and you put them aside. And whenever you need to kind of remember that, you can pull it out and have a look at those good qualities in your drawer. So sometimes it's good to have these little tricks just to kind of to help us, but ideally we don't even need that because we learn how to use our minds in the right way anyway. So that is the idea of the man who plunges into the pond and drinks up all the good qualities of that person. So very similar to the previous one, it's just that different types of good qualities and different types of bad qualities in this case. So let's go on to the next one. And how, friends, should resentment be removed towards the person whose bodily behavior and verbal behavior are impure, but who from time to time gains an opening of the mind, placidity of the mind? Suppose there is a little water in a puddle. Then a person might arrive afflicted, oppressed by the heat, weary, thirsty, and parched. And he would think, this little bit of water is in the puddle. If I try to drink it with my cupped hands or a vessel, I will stir it up, disturb it, and make it undrinkable. Let me get down on all fours, suck it up like a cow, and depart. And he then gets down on all fours, sucks up the water like a cow, and departs. Yeah, so here we have the person who has only a little bit of good qualities, very little good qualities, both the verbal behavior and the bodily behavior are bad, but he gains from time to time an opening of the mind, placidity of mind. And the opening of the mind here is, Pali word is vivarana citta, and vivarana is the opposite of nivarana. And nivarana is the hindrances, right, in the Pali language. So this is the opposite of the hindrances. So you gain this opening of the mind, where the mind feels open and free here, because the hindrances kind of subside. This is the idea here. Placidity of the mind. The mind is placid, it's even, it loses its ruffledness. And this is part, of course, of what happens when the mind is free of the hindrances. It becomes placid and peaceful and serene and all of these kind of things. So this is the person who, even though he has bad actions by body and speech, still sometimes he gains a beautiful mind state. And people say, it is unfair, it is bad, I'm trying so hard to be kind by body and speech. And here comes this character along who's really kind of externally looks really bad. And still sometimes they get kind of good, you know, states of mind despite that. And this is the complexity of the human nature, right? We are so complex sometimes. And we're kind of coming, some of us come from a good background, we have been doing many good things perhaps in the past life, and somehow we've gotten under a bad influence in this life. But we have a lot of good qualities inside, but still externally it looks like we are kind of doing the wrong thing. The other people are the opposite. We're coming from maybe some bad background in the past, we've done many bad things, and only in this life have we learned to behave well. So it takes a long time before that starts to, before it fully affects the mind, and you are able to have that placid mind which is peaceful. So for this reason, we have to be very careful with judging other people. It can be very hard to know all the qualities in somebody. Yeah, very difficult to see these things. Of course, if somebody is an Aryan, if somebody has understood the Dhamma fully, then their behavior will be very good. But for those people who are not Aryans, it can be very hard to judge what is going on. So for that reason, sometimes you will see, if you observe somebody carefully, you will see that they get peaceful mind states, even though their bodily and verbal behavior may often not be quite right. So by careful observation, yeah, we can see those good qualities that are in there. And then we should rejoice in that. And we should be happy. We should feel kind of sense, wow, even though this person has so many bad qualities, still there are some good qualities in there. You can see those good qualities. And we should feel really happy, that because that is a foundation then, of course, for that person to develop further. And it is always good to rejoice in people's good qualities. But of course, it is hard to see, and you have to really narrow your focus down to be able to see this. Yeah, the simile here is a simile of the little a puddle, small little puddle. There's a little bit of water there, so this is like a little, tiny bit of good qualities. And then you come along again, and you are oppressed by the heat, you are angry and upset with this person, right? And then in this case, you have to be very, very careful to focus very narrowly on those good qualities. If you look a little bit far to the left or far to the right, you stir up and you kind of bring those bad qualities into your field of perception. And when you do that, you're no longer able to keep that sense of positiveness towards this person, the sense of metta there. So you have to very narrowly focus on those good qualities and really rejoice in the fact that the person has those good qualities. Of course, one way of doing that, again, is to be able to understand and forgive the bad qualities, to know that in our world it is quite natural that we should have bad qualities because of all the influences and all the things that work on us. So by thinking like that, you can kind of look aside from those bad qualities and focus on the good qualities and rejoice in that instead. So this is what is going on here. So you carefully drink in those good qualities again. And when you drink them up, you cool down and you are no longer afflicted by that heat, etc. And what is so interesting about this is the length, the degree to which the Buddha goes, or here Venerable Sariputta goes, to focus on good qualities. And this is what kind of stands out to me. All of this hard work to focus on good qualities. The next one, number 4, that is about compassion. because number four, this person has no good qualities. But so far, we go to a very, very high extent to focus on the good qualities in other people. And why is that the case? Why should we try so hard to see the good qualities in others when perhaps we could have compassion for the negative qualities instead? And I think the answer to this is that when you see good qualities, it always has a very beneficial effect on your mind. When you see good qualities in others, you rejoice, you feel happy about that. You feel a sense of connection with them. You feel that it lifts you up, right? And all of these have all of these very positive consequences. When you see negative qualities in others, when you focus on the suffering and the problems and you have compassion, then it's easy for that to kind of turn into something which is a bit heavy, a bit negative, because you're seeing problems rather than seeing solutions. So it is much more difficult to deal with compassion in a constructive way than to deal with metta. Metta is always positive because it's friendly, it's goodwill, it is by its very nature it's positive and it will always be supportive in your practice. Whereas with compassion, you use it, but it's a bit more tricky because it can lead to a depletion of energy because, you know, we talk about compassion fatigue and all that kind of stuff. And that comes from this depletion of energy when you see suffering, see too much suffering, and after a while you can't really deal with it anymore. So this, I think, is an interesting point, and it kind of gives you some idea on, one of these kind of subtle aspects of the Buddhist path. When you see how the Brahma Viharas are always taught in the suttas, they're always taught in a certain order. And remember, everything in Buddhism is taught systematically. It's not random how things are taught. And that order is always first, metta, always on the top. Number two, karuna, compassion. Number three, mudita. And the last one is upeka, equanimity or evenness of mind. So upeka is the most difficult one. It takes very profound both wisdom and samadhi to do that. Metta is the first one. It is the most basic one and the most important one. So this is why focusing on metta is so important. Start with that. Then the other ones come kind of later on. You can go a long, long way with metta, right? You can go almost all the way to the end of the path just with that. So it is plenty good enough. You don't actually have to worry so much about the other Brahma Viharas. So that is the third one, focus on even the small qualities of the small good qualities in a person. So now we come to the next one. How, friends, should resentment be removed towards the person whose bodily behavior and verbal behavior are impure and who does not gain an opening of the mind, placidity of mind, from time to time? So here you have the person, you cannot see any good qualities in them, right? It's all bad, it's all dark, bad speech, bad bodily behavior, and the mind is also oppressed by hindrances and negative things. And sometimes we come across people like that in our lives. We just can't see anything. They seem to be full of kind of problems, and we just don't know how to deal with them. We can't really see very much positive in them. But we somehow need to find a way of dealing with these people as well. And one thing to remember, the first thing to remember about this is that we need to understand that when we look at somebody else in this way, it is our perception of them that we are dealing with. Whether that person has some good qualities or not, that is beyond our ability to know. All we have is our perception of that person. So remember that when we talk about all bad qualities, what we mean is that our perception is that they have all bad qualities. Quite likely, our perception is always limited. There's always some degree of uncertainty in that. And once you remember that this perception is uncertain, it is limited, then you are also open to giving that person the possibility of changing. In the future, you may start to see good qualities in that person. Yeah, right now it's very hard, but you give that person the opportunity to change, to be different, because you understand that the limitations of your own ability to judge other people. So this is the first thing to understand, that this is just your personal perception of this. And this is the simile here. Suppose a sick, afflicted, gravely ill person was traveling along a highway, and the last village behind him and the next village ahead of him were both far away. He would not obtain suitable food and medicine or a qualified attendant. He would not get to meet the leader of the village district. Another man traveling along the highway might see him and arouse sheer compassion, sympathy, and tender concern for him, thinking, "Oh, may this man obtain suitable food, suitable medicine, and a qualified attendant. May he get to meet the leader of the village district. For what reason? So that this man does not encounter calamity and disaster right here." Yeah, so this is how you think about somebody who has all bad qualities. You think of them like a sick person, an ill person, somebody who's heading towards their own death, somebody who is heading towards, as it says here, calamity and disaster. And this is how we look at this. And how do you look at somebody who is sick? If somebody is sick, if you come across, you know, a family member who is really sick and kind of falling apart, and maybe they are dying of, I don't know, cancer or whatever it is, how do you feel about that? You don't go blame them. You don't say, "You fool, you idiot, you got the cold. You should have, I told you should stay away from that other person who had the cold. Now you've got it yourself." But, you know, you don't do that because you know that we cannot really control the body to that extent anyway. Sometimes you get sick and that's just the nature, the way things are. And it's impossible to have a body that is always healthy. There's no way. When somebody is sick, you tend to feel compassion and empathy and concern for them. And you want to be kind to them because illness is not something that we really can control. And a very beautiful way of thinking about somebody with all bad qualities. They are sick. They are mentally slightly, they're mentally sick, mentally deranged. Because if you have all bad qualities and everything you do is bad, it means that you are creating enormous amounts of suffering for yourself. We all think that we are creating happiness for ourselves. We think that when we do bad things, we need to do it. There's a good reason for that. But actually, we are just deluded. We don't know what's going on. And because we are deluded, it is as if we are mentally ill in a very real sense. Yeah, here is somebody. And I am very personally very convinced that almost everyone, we know that kindness leads to happiness. Yeah, it is just such a direct and immediate experience. We know that. And yet somehow we are not able to be kind. This is what is happening in this case. Here is a person who at the very core of the being probably would like to be kind. They would like to be happy just like everyone else. But because of that blindness, they can't actually live out that kindness that they want to, that they really want to live out. Yeah, or they are so deluded, they have no idea what's going on. They think they create happiness for themselves, when in fact they are creating enormous amount of suffering for themselves in the future. And you feel such a pity, right? You feel such a, it's so kind of heartbreaking almost when you see that. And when you get into the right kind of idea, the right kind of perception. And sometimes there's nothing you can do. You just see this person walking along the road. Maybe you are standing on the mountain far away and there's no way you can communicate with them. Sometimes there's nothing you can do. You just have to accept that certain people live very self-destructive lives, moving themselves towards suffering in the future. And this is like one of the tragedies sometimes of this samsaric existence, that people are so silly. And then they go down for a while, but in the future again, they kind of come up and they get a new chance perhaps. So in the long run, it's very hard to know what's going on. But at this particular stage, they are like a sick person. They're mentally ill. They are deluded. They have no idea what they are doing to themselves. And there's something very beautiful about this, because very often if somebody does bad things towards us, we tend to feel resentment towards them. This is precisely what this is about, right? They are acting badly towards me. Why are they acting towards me in this way? We tend to take things personally. And this is how anger arises, because we feel that things are personal. But actually, this is one of the things that you start to see when you contemplate what is going on here. It is not personal at all. This is a person who does bad things because of their own conditioning, because of their own past, because of their own delusion. It's got nothing to do with us, really. These things are inherently impersonal. They are just acting out their own inner conditioning without really knowing what is going on. You happen to kind of have to bear the brunt of what is going on because you were in the wrong place at the wrong time. Or you have a particular characteristic in your personality that they don't like. And then that delusion kind of, you have to bear the brunt of that delusion of this other person. But it's not really personal. It is about them. It is not about you. And when you turn your perception around in this way and you look at their problem rather than looking at your problem, then you can turn around this self-interest, the self-concern, turn it into compassion instead. And it's very nice because self-concern is always like a heavy burden on us. Oh, it's about me. And it kind of is a very narrow mind state, a mind state which is not expansive, a mind state that is kind of a small, right? And then you turn it around and start looking at yourself and you look at the other person and you expand the mind out and you actually feel far, far better for having compassion in this way rather than actually focusing on yourself. So it's a very beautiful thing that happens. You turn things around. Of course, it is hard. Naturally, we are self-centered because we are closest to ourselves, right? You feel your own suffering much, much more than you feel anyone else suffering, obviously. So we are very, very close to ourselves. And for that reason, it is easy to take things the wrong way. So don't feel bad about yourself if you get upset with somebody who is difficult. Of course not. But this is a beautiful way of changing this perception around and actually expanding your kind of entire mind and taking in that being compassionate rather than being self-centered about this. So these are very powerful perceptions, right? If you use them in the right way, you learn to think about people in the right way. Remember to see people as more as victims than as a being in charge of their own lives. And once we understand that we are all victims in a certain way, then we're kind of heading in the right direction. One of the problems in our world is this idea that we're all individuals, all responsible for ourselves. We're all kind of in charge of our own lives. This is kind of the traditional view of looking at things. And basically, it's just wrong. It doesn't work like that. We're all conditioned beings. We're all kind of running on a program from the past. And once you start to see that, you start to be able to be compassionate and kind rather than be judgmental about people. So this is this beautiful idea of compassion that you find in this particular case. And then it says so you hope that this man will obtain suitable food and suitable medicine, right? And this is like the Dhamma. May he understand more. May he come out of that delusion. May he kind of, understand that sila, morality, kindness, these are important things in life. And then if we have an opportunity, then we help them. If we haven't got an opportunity, well, then sometimes you just have to watch and just have to see things and to be equanimous about it instead. So too, when a person's bodily and verbal behavior are impure and he does not gain from time to time an opening of the mind, placidity of mind, on that occasion one should arouse sheer compassion, sympathy and tender concern for him, thinking, oh, may this venerable one abandon bodily misbehavior and develop good bodily behavior. May he abandon verbal misbehavior and develop good verbal behavior. May he abandon mental misbehavior and develop good mental behavior. For what reason? So that with the breakup of the body after death, he will not be reborn in the plane of misery, in a bad destination, in the lower world, in hell. In this way, resentment towards that person should be removed. So there you are. It's not nice here how it says this venerable one, right? In this case, we're not actually talking about a monastic, we're just talking about any old person. And here he has this idea of this the venerable one, even if he's a bit of a kind of bad qualities, still. So it's kind of developing that positive perception again towards anybody really. So there you are. That is how to deal with somebody who you find very difficult normally. This is the right way of thinking about them. They are sick. They are ill. And an ill person, you always have compassion for somebody who is a victim. And they are really a victim. And this is the right way of regarding that kind of person. So now we come to the last one, the last category. And how, friends, should resentment be removed towards the person whose bodily and verbal behavior are pure, and who from time to time gains an opening of the mind, placidity of mind? Suppose there were a pond with clear, sweet, cool water, clean with smooth banks, and a delightful place shaded by various trees. Then a man might arrive afflicted and oppressed by the heat, weary, thirsty and parched. Having plunged into the pond, he would bathe and drink, and then after coming out, he would sit or lie down in the shade of a tree right there. So here we have this idea of a person who is full of good qualities, right? Bodily behavior is good, verbal behavior is good, and the mind is also free of hindrances. So here we have this pond, you know, this is the person again, with clean water. There's no algae, there's no water plants, just pure, clean, cool water. Not only is the water cool, but even surrounding this person, the banks are smooth. It's delightful to be in the vicinity of a person like that, because the banks are smooth, and it is shaded by all kinds of various kinds of trees as well at the same time. Still, this angry man arrives. Still, you get angry with these people, even though they've got all good qualities, right? This is just life. And so you get angry, but then you come. And of course, if a person has so many good qualities, it is quite easy to let go of that anger. You just focus on all of those good qualities. You drink those qualities in. And as you drink, and then when you drink them in, you cool down. And when you cool down after coming out, you sit down and lie down in the shade of a tree right there. So you see the good qualities. And after seeing the good qualities, you continue hanging around that person, because this person is a real Kalyana Mitta. They have so many good qualities. So maybe you even become a disciple of that person. Maybe the person you're angry with is like the Buddha. There are definitely examples in the suttas of people getting angry with the Buddha. And then later on they ordain, right? And they say, oh, I was mistaken. I shouldn't have gotten so angry. That was a very silly thing to do. And then you kind of hang around. You lie down right there in the shade of the trees, on the smooth banks or whatever. And this is one of the things that we have to be wary of and careful of. Getting angry with people, especially people who are very kind of spiritually advanced. It always happens. It's impossible to avoid. Just to be careful with those things is what he's saying here. There's a nice sutta in the Sanghita Nikaya, the Akosaka Bharadvaja Sutta from the Sanghita Nikaya. That you may have heard of. It's quite a well-known sutta where this Brahmin man called Akosaka. Akosaka means the kind of the one who is kind of abusive, right? The Bharadvaja, the abusive. He has the epithet abusive, which is kind of strange, but that's what he has in that sutta. And he goes to the Buddha and he kind of yells at the Buddha and says, "You evil Buddha, you are kind of taking all the Brahmins away, ordaining them into this terrible teaching of yours, you're." And then the Buddha says to him, Buddha gives him this nice simile, and he says to him that, well, Bharadvaja, if you have guests coming to your house and you prepare all that lot of food for these guests that come to your house, and then the guests eat some of the food and then they leave, and all the food that is left over, who does it belong to? oh, it belongs to me. And then Buddha said, in the same way, all this anger that you are giving me, I refuse to take that anger on board. It belongs to you. And the idea is that he has to have feel the consequences of all that anger. He gets back to him. The Buddha is kind of, for him, it's irrelevant. He just shrugs his shoulders. Okay, the Buddha knows that he has integrity. He doesn't need to take it on board. And it goes back to him again. So that is the idea there. So that's why you have to be a bit careful with these things. But at the same time, we have to be honest about how the world works. So too, when a person's bodily and verbal behavior are pure, and from time to time he gains an opening of the mind, placidity of mind, on that occasion one should attend to his pure bodily behavior, to his pure verbal behavior, and to the opening of the mind, the placidity of mind that he gains from time to time. In this way, resentment towards that person should be removed. Friends, by means of a person who inspires confidence in every way, the mind gains confidence. When we see people who are exceptional, whose behavior is very, very pure and very beautiful, you tend to gain confidence in those people. And this is one of those wonderful things on the Buddhist path. And one of the things that I remember seeing in the suttas many years ago, that I always like to kind of bring up at this particular point in this particular sutta, is that the Buddha says that even just seeing an arahant in the world is a great blessing here. Why? Because when you see an arahant, you see another possibility, you see an alternative to ordinary life, you see a life lived to the absolute maximum purity, to the maximum of the human potential, and you see something which is very unusual in the world. And when you see that, it opens your eyes and you think, wow, this is possible. It is possible to be like that. So that is why just the seeing of the arahant is a very great blessing in the world. Sometimes it doesn't even have to be an arahant. It can be somebody who has gone a long way on the path, who's very kind of even-minded, has a lot of beautiful qualities. And there still are some people in this world today when you look around. And you feel very inspired when you see that. So this is one of the blessings in life. And this is why people, when they go to the Buddha, they hear the teaching, they see the integrity between the Buddha's conduct, how he speaks, how he acts is how he speaks. And when they see that, you gain automatic faith and confidence in the Buddha as a teacher. So these things are important. And this is why sometimes it is not enough for most people just to have the suttas. You need to have the living example sometimes to feel real confidence that these are not just dry words, they actually are words that have a certain reality behind them. These, friends, are the five ways of removing resentment by means of which a bhikkhu can entirely remove resentment towards whomever it has arisen. So there you are about the removing of resentment sutta. To me, this is one of the most very, very practical suttas. And it's one of those suttas that I always, when I read this the first time, I thought, wow, this is just so beautiful and so practical. And the advice is so simple. It is something that everyone can do, and it is something that I would recommend every one of you to work with these kind of perceptions, this kind of doing things. Because this will really has the potential of transforming your mind, transforming how you look at other people, and make you a much more balanced and even person in life. It allows you to have more compassion, kindness, understanding, and your life would flow so beautifully and nicely if you think about this in the right way. And I've got a couple of minutes left, and one of the just to add maybe a little bit to this, a lot of this is based on the idea of non-self, that people don't have a core, that we are conditioned by things. We are like this boat on the ocean that kind of drifts around according to the prevailing winds and the prevailing currents of the world. We can't see that fully because we have a sense of self. That sense of self blocks us from seeing this fully. But at least we can have a degree of confidence in faith that it is true. Because we know, at the very least, we know that it is partially true. Whether it's 100% true, well, it is that is a matter of faith and confidence. But so one of the nice similes that I think again it was Ajahn Brahm who brought this out the first time is the simile of the red light. And usually when you come to a red light, you're driving your car, usually you accept that the light is red. You usually don't get too angry with a red light. In fact, getting angry with a red light is a bit, is madness, right? We know it is madness to get angry with a red light. I think in Ajahn Brahm's simile, Ajahn Brahm likes to really make it quite dramatic. So he kind of has this man coming out of his car, shaking the red light. You bad red light, you're becoming red at the wrong time. I don't have time for this. I want to kind of move on or whatever. But the idea, of course, is that we are all red lights, yeah? The red light is working according to a certain program, okay, you're red for so and so long, and then you are green again. The red light is just an electronic circuit, or perhaps there is some input from the environment as well, that there are cars there, not there, so it goes green or whatever. They're getting more intelligent, these lights these days. But still, it is a kind of program, right? It is a kind of algorithm that makes it work in a certain way. And that is exactly what human beings are. We are like red lights. Sometimes we go red, which is like get angry. Sometimes we go green. We are very kind and very compassionate and caring. And we are like that. We are running ourselves on these programs that have been built into us from a long, long time ago. A hidden past, in past lives perhaps. One of the ideas why the idea of past lives is so important, because it gives that chance of very deep programming in us, which comes from this unfathomable past somewhere. And once you can move your mind in that direction, and once you can see people in that way, that they are victims themselves of that programming in the deep past, running on this program that was written a long, long, long time ago, then of course it is possible, it allows compassion to arise and understanding to arise. It all comes from this idea of non-self ultimately. That is what a lot of this is based on. Okay, so that is enough for this this morning. This afternoon at 3 o'clock we're going to have a look at once we abandon the anger, of course then you move towards metta. Metta and ill will are just two sides of the same scale. So we're going to have a look a little bit more at metta this afternoon. So we'll see you again at 3 o'clock here.